Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
What are you talking about?
Exactly.
340 IQ. What?
Exactly.
IQs.
So low IQ says what?
What do you think? What do you guys honestly think? Did that go over my head? I don't even get that.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, James Duthie expected to be in studio with us, but...
How about what Babs is wearing in the Dregger Cafe?
He's casual.
He's got Nuthugger shorts on, Birkenstocks, in a grubby tee.
Well, I think he's from Saskatchewan, isn't he?
Yeah, but come on, dude. You're in Denmark.
You never see him in anything but a suit, or he's in the Maple Leaf.
No, or he's got the traditional game day garb, is like this black sweater vest.
Well, right after he's worked out. What he does is he works out hard just before he does his media.
Mandatory. He loves to do interviews panting so everybody knows that he just got a good workout in.
I like his style over there. I have no problem with him wearing t-shirt and shorts. He's not there to impress anybody. What's he doing there? Just probably saying hello to Freddie Anderson.
Maybe scouting? I don't know. Like he does this every year. He goes over there every year.
Well, I'm sure there's a few players there sniffing around. You never know. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, the Dregger Cafe is debuting on SportsCenter tonight, and I guess, you know, Babcock and Dregger spoke about the Matthews meeting, and Babcock just said he wanted to meet with him and his family, and he wants to be the best two-way player in the world, and in order for that to happen, he's got to be pushed, and everything you would expect him to say. But it's interesting that he always qualifies that when it comes to Matthews, like the best two-way player in the world, which is what he's looking for. You know, and I'm not saying that Matthews doesn't want that.
Maybe he just wants to be the best player.
Yeah.
And I know you got to play the 200-foot game, but...
Well, I think Babcock is used to...
Babs is just so obsessed with Datsyuk and Zetterberg.
Datsyuk and Zetterberg, that's what it is. But, I mean, that's how he won. That's how he won. So, yes, he had other players there that were special. But I think he wants to carve that type of mold. I don't mind it. Austin Matthews is very talented offensively, and he's good defensively as well. Like he's an elite player. I don't mind a coach pushing him. You know what the coach should be pushing is all of them to play better defense, so they're not 28th in shots against. Like that's the one thing. And I know this season they had record points. They had a lot of good things, but I would argue that they have less points next season, but become a more well-rounded team. And that's up to a coach.
Yeah, it is.
Because the coach, he got the best players in the world to win 2-1 in the Olympics, to play a style. And he's got to do that here because it's evident in you're looking at these teams in the playoffs, like a lot of them are very deep. The teams left, I mean. A lot of them are very deep, can score, but they also have the ability to defend.
Well, you look at Winnipeg, it's the best example of that. I mean, Winnipeg, they've got offense, as we know, and they've had that all year. But when they get a lead, they shut you down, man. They smother you.
No room.
There's no room. And we witnessed it in Toronto the second last week of the year. Remember, you and I were in the building, and they were up 2-1 or 3-1 in the third, and the Leafs didn't get a sniff.
Gone.
Like nothing. And that's how you win.
And they just don't sit back, too. They'll forecheck you, and they'll keep the puck. And that's how they defend. It's like, we're going to go get the puck, and you're not going to get it off us, and that's how we're going to defend.
Yeah.
And you will have no chance.
Yeah, exactly. So you're right. I mean, Matthews is the main event. He's the guy that Babcock, it's imperative that Babcock pushes him and makes sure he grows, but everyone's got to be a part of that.
For sure.
James Duthie in studio. What's up, James?
How are you, boys? I apologize that I forgot last week to come when I was supposed to be here.
Even what is the Noodles, garbage excuse you
Noodles
give?
Could have brought me and well, just didn't even mention
him
it.
Him and I were working together.
And that's what we thought was going
to
happen.
There was a small incident where we had to retape a couple times. There was a cameraman in the background of one of our hits. I don't know why.
Well, we have you know how that big screen we have on our set behind us? I guess if you walk behind it, it casts a shadow, like it's ultra thin. So we were right
so
in the
he
middle.
He was like standing behind there, like pretending he's not being seen. But there's like a giant.
So we got late, and then Noodles left.
And then I just walked
over.
He
just abandoned me.
What I assumed, because it was 5:05 at the time, and Hunt had said that you had only had till like 5:15. I'm like, this guy's saying to hell with it. He's not coming back with
me. I just completely forgot.
Yeah, there you go.
Which I often do.
Well, it's all right.
I think I'm worried about myself.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm hitting early Alzheimer's.
I saw you chirping Draeger on Twitter.
Oh, the Draeger Cafe is a joke. Have you guys talked about this at all?
No, not yet.
Well, not really. I mean, explain.
What did he order for lunch today? Two buns?
Well, yeah, explain your problem with him.
Okay. The interviews are fine. But if you're going to bring a big NHL star, a Connor McDavid, a Mike Babcock, a coach, and have a segment called the Draeger Cafe, you can't just put a little title piece of cardboard and say it's a cafe. He has never in the whatever 3 to 4 years of this thing had any food on the table. You watch, forget the interviews, don't even listen to what the guys are saying, just look around. First of all, the cafes are empty. There's nobody anywhere near them, and there's two glasses of water on the table. So I said, you can't brag about this segment that you're trying to turn into a brand and not have some food. So I shamed him on Twitter multiple times.
Like, have some Grey Goose and crackers and cheese.
Exactly. No, do better than that. So they put a couple of apples and a couple of pieces of bread.
There was lemons in there. Like, nobody was going to eat. Like, I was looking at that fruit basket. It was the most...
I'm not even sure if it was real fruit.
I think it was fake.
You know the grandma's fake fruit they already had on the table?
He grabbed it from the hotel in the lobby. It was like fake fruit. And then behind it was two, like, croissants or something.
Yeah. I said that what the Draeger Cafe has gone from is from 184 days on a life raft with nothing to POW rations. That's what it is now. Yeah. You have Connor McDavid in your cafe. Give him some bruschetta, you know, a little pasta. I don't even care what his answers are. I want to see him eating some pasta.
Well, how about a Danish dish, like something that is uniquely Danish?
I was going to say that, but I couldn't come up with anything.
There you go.
Eat a little cherry Danish.
Exactly. Wherever you are in the world, that's what is on the table.
Is that why the Danishes were named for the Danish?
I would assume.
Let's open the lines.
I want to do the Dogger Cafe leading up to the Leafs opener.
Right.
The champagne room at the Brass Rail. The Dogger Cafe.
Mike Babcock's getting a lap dance.
Yeah, Babs comes in.
Kyle Dubas.
First guest, Kyle Dubas, new general manager.
Champagne room.
And
both
you know,
of them at the
and
same
you know
time.
You have to get the announcer at the beginning. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Mitch Marner.
Joining us now.
It's all coming together.
And Poison say, can be the only songs being played in the background. Or Def Leppard.
What if they say, welcome back? Then you know that they've been
right.
Welcome back, Mitch Marner. Whoa, I'm sorry. We're here. You can't do that.
No, you can't. No, you got to be careful with that.
Everybody put your hands together for the lovely Mitch Marner.
Put some sugar on me.
Yes.
That'd be good.
The Dogger Cafe is happening.
I would watch the hell out of that.
The creepy guys around the table, though, would hate your act.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be like, I'm not here to watch this guy interview Mitch Marner.
I know the guy, the owner, though. We could set up a little private area.
Yeah, but you know, would be like, can we get some swag over here?
Yeah.
What about those hats?
I'm just envisioning, like, us calling, especially when Lou is the GM. Yeah. Lou, we have this idea over at TSN. We're going to do something called the Dogger Cafe. It's going to be like a champagne room at a strip joint. do you think we could have, we'd like to do Matthews and Marner together over there?
Yeah. Not going to go.
Probably not going to happen.
Click.
What's your take on Lamoriello? Why doesn't he just get the Islanders gig so we can stop messing around here? Like, doesn't that seem like a lock at this point?
I would think so, but maybe he wants certain things. That has been a bit of a mess, hasn't it? The last few years. And
good point.
Lou is probably like, if I'm going to come in there, this, and this.
It's also a process, too. Like, a lot of people were wondering, well, why didn't Shanny hire Kyle Dubas the day that he fired Lou Lamoriello? But in defense of Brendan Shanahan, that would have meant while the playoffs were going on, he would have had to mastermind this plan, interview the two guys behind Lou's back. Like, things just can't happen that quickly. There's a process that has to happen.
Even if you know in his mind he knew what was going, you have to go through that. Yeah. Even with the Raptors last week, that thing looked a little greasy when... You put out Casey.
That was garbage.
And Masai,
James.
And then the next day.
Like the Masai Ujiri, he knew that he was firing him as soon as the final buzzer went. You don't parade him out to the media.
Yeah.
Well, I think you could have done it. You could have done it. Like, Casey deserved his moment. I don't think Masai should have been out there with him, because then it led to awkward questions about, like, he should have just let Casey, I would say, do that news conference.
James, there's no pressure on those press conferences. They can do them whenever they want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just popped up. Okay, we're having a press conference. Be down at so-and-so in 2 hours. Just don't do it.
Yeah. Well, you could buy yourself time. I think people would understand if you said...
No kidding.
Okay, the media demands sort of the end of year thing, though. It's kind of a...
Okay, but is it always 2 days after? You could say...
You can do it whenever you want. You do it whenever... You control the timeline.
We're in evaluation, though. Say, Dwayne Casey's not speaking. The whole organization's under evaluation. We all knew. I mean, Josh Lewinberg broke the story and said that Masai is leaning towards letting Casey go. That would just affirm the story.
Mm-hmm.
But even if he... asked for more time and said Casey's not going to speak, and then 2 days later comes out and said I decided I'm keeping him, now he's speaking, or whatever. Like, I didn't like it that he spoke, and it seemed like he was...
Well, he's a dead man walking.
He was a dead man walking, and he's a class guy. That's the one thing I think people are upset about is Dwayne Casey's a top-notch person and also a top-notch coach. Like, it didn't look good. It doesn't look good on the Raptors and Masai that you're firing a coach of the year.
Yeah, it's awkward optics. I wish he could have had a chance with a core other than DeRozan and Lowry or mm-hmm. some other people. I would like to see him do that. Having said that, I sort of understand that because you can't trade the players, the only thing you can change is the coach. So I don't. It sucks that it happened, and it's going to be really awkward when he wins the Coach of the Year. I sort of get it, but I wish he would have had a chance. I wish you could be more flexible on the roster, and so give this guy a chance with another piece, a main piece.
Well, they'll make that announcement at the NBA Awards. Mm-hmm. Like, will he be Dwayne Casey unemployed? Like, will that be his title? What will his title be?
Formerly of the Raptors, do you say? Like, just
because he's not the coach anymore.
Coach,
like,
Dwayne Casey?
What's the more awkward speech, Casey's or Pecorini when he wins the Vezina?
I think Casey, because he's unemployed. Yeah. Like, Pecorini will still be...
Yeah, he just played bad.
Casey might be employed again.
Well, that's true. He could get
the Bucks job or
could
something.
Could be in Milwaukee,
right?
Could be in Orlando or Atlanta or something like that. I think he'll get another job, but you're right.
You're right.
I saw another level of awkwardness. I played my only All-Star game. Sandis Ozalinch... I think he was traded before the All-Star game to the West, but he still played for the Panthers on the East.
Right.
And he was not happy about it. It was the goofiest thing. And he had a bit of a time.
Yeah, his routine there is legendary, correct?
Legendary.
Off-ice routine.
But it was weird. He was traded to Anaheim, but then he played in the All-Star game as a Florida Panther, and... It was just goofy.
Yeah.
Goofy.
Well, I mean, we've seen the awkwardness. John Scott. Remember the John Scott? Like, that
he was in
the
American Hockey League.
But it was a fiasco.
Mm-hmm. I guess then he was in Arizona, technically, but he was representing Montreal. Or, no, he was in Montreal, but representing Arizona. It was the opposite.
Right. But hey, they're making a movie out of that. So.
I know. True.
Would you watch it?
I'll watch it just because it's a hockey and it's John Scott thing.
I watched a show called SWAT, and he was on one of the episodes.
John Scott was on?
John Scott. Was on one of the episodes. He played a hockey enforcer and
typecast.
The SWAT team members were there to protect him.
It's like in Goon 2 when I played a hockey broadcaster.
You were very good.
For a network.
You were very, very good.
They had a show called Sports Desk.
So game 2 tonight in Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Scheifele's scoring at a rate that we've never really seen before, not in this century. But I have been taken aback by this idea that this is a coming out party for him. And I think the idea that people can promote that, if you want to promote that, go for it. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that are tuning in for the first time to Winnipeg's story and to Scheifele's story. But I think this is the issue with the NHL's marketing campaign. Quite frankly, their deal with NBC in the States, where they don't play any, they play about 6 to 8 teams tops. And if you're not one of those teams, and Winnipeg has never been one of those
teams, ever will be.
That's your problem as a league. Because if people are just waking up to Mark Scheifele, you haven't done a good enough job of promoting who he is. Because this guy's been a beast for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Well, top 10 player in the league.
Two comments. I guess the one thing you could say is until you actually get a chance to do it in the playoffs, and we talked about this the other night on the panel, that's when maybe when you make the transition from a star to a superstar when everybody sees you do it on the biggest stage. So there's that. You're 100% right. The guy's been one of the best players in the game for a little while now. The NBC thing, just as an aside, is I've always thought is ludicrous. I think it's the most short-sighted thing in broadcasting. They just live from weekend to weekend and are unwilling to take a chance. They just have to maximize those regional ratings every weekend in the markets that do the best. And so it's always a steady dose of Pitt and Philly and Wash
and Chicago.
And Chicago, and that's it. Oh, and over and over and over again. And that's just... I would have wished, and there's some really smart hockey people over there, but I really would have wished that when they got the deal and it was 10 years in length, they would have made an effort at the beginning to try and showcase other stars. But they're so terrified of getting one low-rated game that's why you'll never see. And Canada is death to them. Even Toronto doesn't do, like Toronto doesn't, you know, nothing registers from Canada on their ratings. So but any Canadian team is death to them.
If you were sitting in the boardroom for the NBC side of the production, because I know you're smart, you know everything about the business, you'd be like, yeah, we don't want that one.
But here's the thing.
We want Chicago versus Pitt.
It's a misnomer, though, that Toronto doesn't give them ratings. Like last year against Washington, that was the highest rated series on NBC.
Washington versus who?
Toronto. Absolutely it was. Now, they didn't get the Toronto market, but other people in the country were intrigued by the Maple Leafs
but
and by Matthews.
But the fact that you can't throw up a McDavid game, you know, one, to try and showcase him to America is why. I think they've kind of given up, honestly, in the States. I think that they believe, and maybe they're right, that it's going to be a regional sport forever there. Mm-hmm. That it's never going to be. Maybe they've seen it for 30 years. They've all tried and no one's had success. So they've just accepted the fact that it's going to be big in these markets. We're never going to penetrate these other markets. And so this is what we're going to do. We're just going to feed them a constant dose of those teams.
But if Winnipeg wins the Cup, don't you have to force feed like a change of narrative there? Mm-hmm. I mean... That's the Cup winner.
Well, you have to promote it. Like, if they're in the Cup final, that's what it is.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if the Winnipeg Jets go on, and it looks like, I mean, this, I believe the Jets are a better team than Vegas, but Vegas continues to surprise everyone. I don't know if it's come back down to earth, but we'll see. But the Jets could be a team legitimately to win a Stanley Cup. So you have to, they have to get their due. And it is a market, and I know it's a small regional market. In Winnipeg and Canada that doesn't move the needle, but if you're a hockey fan, if you're NBC, if you're any of these other companies that need to grow their ratings, like, I mean, why would you not have a focus on here's the Cup champs versus, I guess it would be, versus Chicago, versus that's where those markets would move the needle.
The one bit of credit I'll give to Bettman is that Bettman likes these other markets getting into the Stanley Cup Finals. He doesn't see it. I remember when LA played New York that year and everybody said, oh, this is Bettman's...
fantasy
dream, yeah.
His whatever dream. I don't think he really doesn't care. He likes, as much as he likes, he likes it when Carolina gets in or these pet projects of his or Vegas gets in or Winnipeg gets in. He likes that it's different every year. And that's one thing that I guess I would applaud him on, that he isn't short-sighted enough to say, we just need the Chicagos and the LAs and New Yorks in there every year.
Well, Washington is still available to them and they take both games in Tampa.
They look good.
They say the series, you're not in trouble until you lose one at home.
Tampa's in big trouble.
You're in trouble.
You know what's goofy about those stats, and maybe it is more, when the teams that go down 2-0, you would think when you win 2-0 on the road that you have it completely under control. But I'm pretty sure that in most sports, when you lose 2 at home, you have a better chance to win the series than the teams that lose 2 on the road. Because if you think about it, it's the favored teams that have lost the 2 games, so they're more likely to come back. Did I just lose you guys completely?
I have no idea. Are we still talking about hockey?
It's a higher seed. It's a higher seeded team.
So here, let me one more time.
All right.
Washington.
He just did the George Bush.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Washington wins the first 2 games in Tampa.
Yes.
You would say that you win the first 2 on the road. Now they're going home for 2.
Great.
Great, right?
This is garbage.
You have a podcast. I'm saying that a team like Tampa that loses the first 2 at home has a better chance historically to come back in the series than a seed that loses.
Higher seeded team.
Because they still have more games at home. And
I wish I'd never started.
Save that for the Rubber Boots podcast, please, next time. No, I got you. I understand what you're saying. And listen, Tampa's still Tampa's still loaded with talent, and they got two more home games if it pushes to seven.
But they don't have Lars Eller, the best hockey player on the planet.
Here's the other thing that, Brian, you and I were talking about this off air. Kucherov kicks Connolly at the end of the game. If that was Tom Wilson that did
five
that to Kucherov, like, nobody's talking about that.
It should be a suspendable act. It seems pretty... You can't kick people.
You can't.
Ever. And it was a blatant kick.
But it wasn't a kick. It was more of a trip. It was like a schoolyard as you're skating by.
It was kind of like a sucky kick.
Right.
But it's still... All I'm saying is that the fake outrage people, if that was Tom Wilson doing that to Kucherov...
Well, wasn't it Chris Simon that kicked somebody in the island one day?
Stomp.
That was a bad one, though. That was a pure stomp.
That was a stomp. Which, and Cy knew what he was doing. I think Pronger got one, too.
Yeah, Pronger did. He got
Prong's got one for...
I think he stomped Grabowski.
Yeah, he may have given somebody a little...
How the heck is Lars Eller... Like, when you watch Lars Eller last night, how you go, where is this guy...
Well, he's been farther down the lineup because back...
Well, no, but even in Montreal, I guess Therrien didn't like him or whatever, but I don't... That guy's good.
Well, he was in Montreal for a long time,
your reclamation projects, too. Devontae Smith-Pelly... I mean, he couldn't, you know, he almost ate himself out of the league. Mm-hmm. And here's a guy who's he scores a big goal last night. Alex Chiasson couldn't play for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, or the Ottawa Senators.
Like, that's where they went and got some guys to fill out the bottom of their roster who are pretty good players.
Mm-hmm.
And that Smith-Pelly's, I really like him. I think he's a good player. Chiasson's just a solid player. Connolly was a first rounder to Tampa.
Right. Well, and they're doing this without Backstrom. Backstrom hasn't played yet.
I know.
Which is amazing.
I'm not surprised they're winning. I just can't believe that how easily it looked. Like, that was pure dominance. You know what's going to happen now? Everyone's going to say, we got to get big again. Washington's big.
Yeah.
The Oilers will be like, we're back!
Well,
right.
Winnipeg's big, too.
And Winnipeg is.
Yeah, the difference is Washington and Winnipeg are big, but also can skate and are deep.
Really,
Peter Chiarelli, if they win, and Tom Wilson's, if he'll be like, we're re-signing Maroon.
Or offer sheet Wilson. Wilson, I think, might be an RFA coming up. So just hand over the farm.
By the way, James, there's a funny account. What is it? The fake Oilers GM?
Yeah, it's a fake. It's a parody Peter Chiarelli account.
It's fake Peter Chiarelli. The best Twitter account ever.
It's great. It really is outstanding. It's everything you would want it to be. Put it that way. Old Peter Chiarelli. He's always taking heat, man. But he's back for at least another summer, so he'll be doing his thing at the draft and free agency. And
well, they better have a good summer.
Don't you think it would be hard to be that guy? Like, you walk into the room, you'd almost be sheepish when you're the GM of a team that's completely underachieved, and you're seeing all the other guys, hey, how's it going? How was your year? Huh? That's good.
Well, and James, he's been fleeced on so many trades. Yeah. Like, think he's won some trades, too, but there have been some awful trades.
Peter Chiarelli. Happen in Toronto next year. If the goalie goes south, right? Because that's what happened.
Well, yeah,
Talbot.
That was a big part
of
it.
Their top players don't play well, like,
or
this is,
or injuries. They've pretty much been major injury free.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it happened to L.A. the year before. It's happened to Ottawa last year. Ottawa went to the conference final last year. They went from the conference final to bringing up the rear of the National Hockey League.
Yeah, they finished
in
second last. I think
in
it was.
1 year. That's,
it's just such a drastic drop.
It's such a drastic drop for some of these organizations.
I can't picture the Leafs finishing second worst than
the league. I can't either. They're too talented, you never know. That's the thing. I think that's the league right now.
That'd be a tough start for Dubas, man. Imagine Dubas, and it wouldn't be his fault.
The Leafs are too good. The Leafs are too good. But what I'm saying is you have one or two bad injuries and one or two bad seasons from key players, it doesn't look good.
No.
And so much parity in the league. Scary.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Of all the tests on Dubas, I think that will be the biggest, is just the market. And if that happens next year, to not panic and not go out and make a trade for the sake of it. And I think that the reason Brendan Shanahan has hired him is because he'll have that ability, that he feels he's strong enough. But that will be the challenge when if something like Noodle says happens and they're struggling in the first 2 months and the market is suddenly saying, come on, Dubas, do something.
Wow.
We need something.
You're right. And that's going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
You know, someone's going to say or write a piece about how the young, inexperienced GM, this is where you You make it or break it.
The stuff about the age and the looks, though, drives me crazy. I mean, who cares? If he's good, he's
He seems like a bright... He was sitting here the other day. He's a bright guy. He's a sharp guy.
Yeah.
You know, they do have probably one of the best-looking management teams now with Dubas. And Shanny looks older now, but he's still a handsome gentleman. There's some slitters out there.
He fires up a suit. Well, we were talking about Masai speaking. Like, Shanahan hasn't spoken. Which, like, he introduced Dubas, but...
That was basically a presser. Like, they both did the presser.
Yeah, Shanny kind
of... You think so?
Yeah.
Well, I guess so.
That's got to be the greatest more out of the age difference the change in GMs in sports history, isn't it? What's Lute, 72?
73.
73 to 32, yeah. 41 years. Actually, that's got to be a record.
Kyle will be 32 in November. He's only 31 right now.
No, I think he's 85. I think he's turning... I think so.
His Wikipedia page is wrong then, because there's a big debate about that.
Yeah.
Is he 31 or is he 32?
I'm pretty sure the Leafs confirmed that he's 32, yeah. Turning 33. Anyway. All right, James.
Sharp guy.
Good seeing you, man. There's James Duthie of TSN and the Rubber Boots podcast. When is the new one going up online?
Oh, it's going to be, this one's big.
One?
If you haven't listened to Lindsay Hamilton singing Chris Isaak's Wicked Game on the last edition of the Rubber Boots podcast.
I know you did. You went to her and asked her to sing another song.
No, I haven't, but I'm just saying you should listen to this one. We taped another one today that'll be up in a couple of days, but she has the voice of an angel.
Is that right?
So you asked her to sing another song?
I had a dream. You know, we have a segment where I do dreams, and I dreamt about Lindsay singing. It was a little creepy that Lindsay was singing in like with Lester, my guy, as a background singer. Puffy had died, and they were singing like a tribute to Puffy. And he went, Stoff went and got Lindsay to sing the song, and she should be on tour. It's that good.
Like, she's legitimately, like, not in your dreams good. In real life, she's
fantastic
really good.
Good.
She's very talented.
Tyler should look it up. You should play it in your 6 o'clock hour.
We don't have time for that.
No, we'll find
Just
it.
Play the whole podcast there in the 6 go. O'clock hour.
There you go. Playing
right,
some
James.
Sound, though.
Good seeing you.
I like that idea.
Yeah, you would. I knew you would. He knows what you're all about. Bob McKenzie will be in studio in about an hour. David Purdom from ESPN on this Supreme Court news down in the States. Legalize sports gambling. It could be happening. If it does, how will it change your experience at the arena? We'll get into that next. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Just heard Fergie point out the breaking news this hour that Major League Baseball has extended the administrative leave of Roberto Osuna for 7 more days. And I feel like in 7 more days, it's going to roll over for 7 more days because nothing's come out of the story. No more details. There's a lot of rumors out there about what happened or what might have happened, but nothing on the record. The police are doing a great job of keeping it under wraps.
Well,
and the Jays haven't said anything since... The initial story.
It's a legal matter now, so they probably can't really talk on the record about it until the process goes through. So, yeah, we are kind of left in the dark. There is a lot of allegations out there and online. People hear this, people hear that.
Till the facts come out, how do you even comment on it?
You can't. You don't want to speak out of turn.
No, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. It's just, you know, now he's... He's not playing. He can't play. He's still getting paid, but he's not playing. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is ESPN's betting analyst, David Purdom. How you doing, David?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. I mean, big news down in the States today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in favor of the idea that legalized or making sports gambling illegal is unconstitutional. So, in other words, they've sent it back to the states and said, if you want to legalize it, go ahead. How put this into perspective? How significant is this ruling?
No, it's massive. You nailed it on the head there. Basically, what they're saying is the states can decide whether they want to legalize sports betting or not, and they can figure out how they want to regulate it best. This federal ban that was in place for 26 years—that's twice as long as the alcohol prohibition era—that we have not had legal sports betting outside of Nevada. It's going to change things. It's going to change sports. The leagues are kind of scrambling right now, trying to figure out what they want to do. Massive, massive story.
So you said the leagues are scrambling. I mean, what league do you think could benefit the most out of adding this scenario into it?
You know, it's kind of a smaller league. I think Major League Soccer has a good chance here to really narrow the gap between the NFLs and NBAs in itself, just because of in-game wagering is such a hit over in Europe. And soccer kind of lends itself to in-game betting. And a lot of the sports leagues have been saying that this is the future. In-game is the future. And if they really make a big push on that, I think Major League Soccer has a good chance to take advantage of this. And they have been supportive of the notion of legalized sports betting in previous years.
Well, the idea of in-game betting is a more of a recent phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of becoming mainstream. And with what happened today, it may become completely mainstream in the future.
Why don't you ask about your idea of putting a cap on it, where I want to cater to the heavy hitter
right.
as well.
Well, and this is what we were talking about earlier, Dave, and I'd be curious to get your take on this. I mean, let's presume 5-10 years down the road, we've got sports books in arenas throughout North American sports, and live in-game betting is available via an app if you're in the building or whatever. Do you anticipate that the leagues will just say, go ahead, there's no cap, bet whatever you want? Or do you think they try to save themselves a little bit and place a limit on the amount that you could actually bet in terms of in-game betting?
I'm not so sure the leagues will put the cap on it, but the sports books will. I mean, you cannot bet down as much money on an in-game wager as you can on a pre-game wager, on a point spread wager right now. Now, maybe the market grows big enough where the limits will increase on those type of wagers, and then maybe the leagues start getting involved. You know, Major League Baseball and the NBA have been going around kind of state by state lobbying for some stipulations that they'd like to see. They'd like to have some sort of right to a refusal of certain type of bets. I don't know if you guys saw a few months ago, there was something in England where a company offered a bet on, would this goalkeeper eat a pie during the game? And it was just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
But of course,
he did.
He ate the pie. And so, you know, it just brings all this integrity issues in. And we shouldn't. Sportsbook's got to be a little more mature, a little more professional than doing that. So I think everyone needs to do that. It's interesting you mentioned the cap, though, because I do think that, you know, limits are a way that we can protect consumers, especially people that may have issues with gambling and controlling themselves. I would like to see some sort of limits at least considered on certain type of bets and waived for certain kind of accounts to kind of monitor them.
What, just heading down the pie prop bet type of scenario, what is the craziest prop bet you've ever come across, or do you envision, especially if this gets implemented?
You know, there's all those weird ones during the Super Bowl. Will there be a uniform or a wardrobe malfunction at halftime? Or will this person wear hair, you know, pink hair or whatever? And then there's really popular ones like, you know, the over-under on the national anthem is extremely popular. There was $1 million bet industry-wide in the offshore market on just that alone. So in Vegas, you know, they offer bets on the coin flip, and that gets six figures of handle all the time, too. I think the ones that have the chance to be the most manipulated and where they have run into issues in Europe at lower level soccer are things like who gets the first yellow card, or you know, which player receives a red card, and then you could, you know, perceivably you know, compromise that person and convince them that it's worth it for them to take a yellow card or get kicked out of the game and get rewarded for it. So we do need to be careful on what kind of bets we wager offer, in my opinion.
With David Purdom of ESPN on this story today, the Supreme Court down in the States ruling that making sports gambling illegal is unconstitutional, so they're sending it back to the states, and if the states want to legalize it, they will, and we know Jersey will, and we believe a bunch more states will, and how that factors into the Canadian sports scene, I guess we'll find out. But ultimately, the leagues, they want in on this, so a lot of them do anyway. The NBA's been open about it. Major League Baseball's been open about it. How much money do you believe is in this for the leagues, just based on your understanding of you know, offshore stuff, the black market money, the amount of money being gambled already? How much money do you think these leagues could be looking at in the future?
So the leagues have been looking for anywhere from 0.25% to 1% of total amount bet on their games. Now, this isn't just how much is won or lost. This is every bet. They would want $1 for every $100 bet on baseball, for example. So the total amount of bet on baseball is probably in the billions of dollars. It broke over $1 billion in Nevada. So obviously, if we get to nationwide, you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars if they were to able to get that sort of integrity fee put in. Now, the state's really pushing back hard against that. Nobody has said, okay, we're going to do that yet. No law has been passed that has that integrity fee or a cut for the leagues inside. But the leagues are planning to go to Congress in D.C. where they may have a little more clout. And we could see some sort of, you know, they want to call it a royalty or they want to call it an integrity fee. They could get that established in D.C. And that would make them a lot of money, and it would make the sportsbook business really tough because books don't operate on very large margins. You know, the average hold percentage in Las Vegas is just 5%. So while they may take in $4.8 billion in wagers, they only hold 5% of that, and that's not a very wide operating margin.
Thank you for the details and the breakdown, David. We'll see where the story goes, and I'm sure we'll get you on again down the road.
Sounds good, guys.
There's David Purdom of ESPN joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com. Well, you know the leagues, NHL, NBA, NFL, MLB, MLS, PGA Tour, whatever it is, they're going to look at this and say, okay, if we're going to open the doors anyway, how can we make money?
Yeah, how can we get a piece of it?
And I would think the players should be promoting this idea, sure, too, because if we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars being pumped into hockey-related revenue or football-related revenue, based on the CBA, they're supposed to get 50% of that.
So here,
let's the NHL security meetings are going to go up, too. You know, yeah, those guys that come in at the beginning of the season, they're like, hey, if you meet Joe from the Bridge's uncle at a bar and he says, who's injured?
Yeah, how's Turgeon feeling right now?
What was those meetings are going to go through the roof.
Joe Colombo from Long Island with the leather coat.
Who's that NBA ref that got busted?
But that's what I was going to ask you. I'll play devil's advocate.
Donnie? Such a little gambler.
But if you want the players involved, now you get crazy prop bets. What if players do get involved somehow? Like, that's the scary part.
Like, as dumb as what that guy just said, there's viz of the guy on the bench eating the hot dog or hamburger or the beef patty pie or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, how the hell does that guy do that?
Well, he knew about it. That's the thing. You can't have that. What you can do is weed through a lot of it.
It's so easy for someone to just say, hey, one of his buddies, during the second half, eat this, and we all make a million.
I hear you, but what I'm saying is don't allow that to even be a prop. So if the league is working in conjunction with the sports book, you don't have it so that a guy takes a sip of his water bottle at the 10-minute mark. You cut that out.
Even give it a possibility.
It's not even an option. I would cut out anything that is related to the officials as well, because the refs make a lot less money, and I think there's more of an opportunity for them to be infiltrated here than the players. You got to remember, the players are making millions of dollars.
Right.
Why would they throw their careers away so their buddy can win a prop bet? Like, you're not going to do that.
But here's a scenario, I think I've told you guys this before. I played with a guy who's from Europe. When he was 18 years old, he broke into one of the European leagues. And before the game, the captain came in and said, guys, tonight it's a 3-3 tie. And he didn't understand. Both captains had gotten together and said, this will be the score tonight. They pool their money. They bet on the game. People, and apparently it's quite common. He didn't understand what was going on. It's 3-3 with a minute and a half left. He goes down the wall and blasts one shelf on the goaltender. Both teams are mad at him. He's in trouble because he scored the game-winning goal when the fix was in. And I said, I can't even believe we're talking about this at the pro hockey level. This is a long time ago.
You also got to keep, this isn't the pro hockey level. This is where, in like Slovakia or something like that?
Well, it's one of the leagues, yes. But what I said, well, what would the goalie do if it was 2-1? He said, a lot of times he'd move his leg out of the way. Like, can you imagine a shot from center and the guy's like, well, sorry, I'm good here.
Listen, I hear you, and that's always been a problem with the lower level leagues where those guys don't make that much money.
Right.
Like, you go down, you know, the level 2, level 3 soccer games, I'll let that goal in and we'll all make an extra couple grand.
Yeah, exactly.
But if we're talking about the pro leagues where guys are making millions and millions of dollars, they're not going to do that.
That's a documentary that I would be fascinated to watch. Like, the fixes of guys that have, who knows what the hell's gone on in sports.
Think about it, though. There are guys on the league minimum. Guy making $550, $600.
Yeah.
that he gets 3 minutes of the game, whether it's hockey, basketball, or something.
Listen, he's not the guy that could, the refs.
That's the fear, but yeah. Those guys. But the whole point this whole time has been that's been available to them anyway on the black market.
Correct.
You can find a bookie and be like, hey, I'm putting down, you know, put down this kind of money with that guy that we're doing this or whatever,
yeah.
Or offshore or whatever. It, you know, it's about, you got to regulate it. You have to make sure that you're on top of it if you're the sports books. But
should have got Pete Rose on today.
Pete would be a happy man today, I would think.
Would this think. If it gets legalized, would he make the Cooperstown now?
I don't think he'd get into Cooperstown, no. Because he's still, you know, he was betting on the games he was playing in and managing. And he claims he never bet on the Reds, but I don't believe that for a second. Or against the Reds, I should say. He always claimed he always bet on his team to win. I don't believe that for a second. He's got his fifth starter out there. He's hungover going up against some beast on the other team. There's no way he didn't hammer the opposition. All right, Bob McKenzie will be in studio. I believe we're going to catch up with Richard Griffin. The Jays dropping 2 of 3 against the Red Sox. They're off tonight in New York, taking on the Mets tomorrow. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. The O-Dog went to do a Sports Center hit, so this is a perfect time to point out that today marks the 20th anniversary of the final episode of Seinfeld.
Yes.
Because O claims he's never seen it, he doesn't care for it, he doesn't want to talk about it. And
He's lying. It's ridiculous. There's not anybody out there who hasn't at least watched a couple Seinfeld episodes.
It's impossible if you watch TV to not come across a syndicated episode.
Well, Mullen and Hunt, they're like 27, 28, I think.
I'm 30,
okay,
but yes.
Mullen is 30 years old. Hunt is like 27, I think.
27, yeah.
Okay. You're 27-year-old millennial. Have you watched Seinfeld?
Yeah, I'm a big Seinfeld fan.
There you go. See, like, I think everyone, it's one of those shows that I think will last through generations. It'll last.
At some point, it's going to die off, though. It has to, right? Like the Three Stooges, I'll bet you people back in the 50s were like, this show will be around forever. It's the greatest. Right. And eventually people are like, all right, enough. I can't watch these guys continue to do what they do. But, like, this is one of those things about radio. We use it as a reference point all the time. When anything comes up, we're like, oh, remember in Seinfeld, that episode. But sometimes we forget, as crazy as it may sound, there are people that have never seen it and don't understand the reference. And there are certain shows, like I think Seinfeld's one of them, the Sopranos, probably Game of Thrones recently.
Yeah, recently.
The Simpsons, where people use them like as reference points all the time and just assume that everyone else will understand it. Yeah. And I'm sure that is really annoying if you don't.
Yeah, the Game of Thrones one, not for me because I haven't seen it.
So you wouldn't get it. Exactly.
I wouldn't get it, but I don't think there's a lot of analogies. Like, I think Seinfeld, the reason we use it so much is because it's everyday stuff. They say it's a show about nothing,
mm-hmm.
but it's everyday scenarios. You know, they Curb Your Enthusiasm. Is a little edgier, but...
Way more edgier. Also on HBO, right? So not simulcast on all these channels that we come across all the time. So Curb Your Enthusiasm, nowhere near the same amount of audience.
But very funny.
Very funny. Very similar. I mean, it's Larry David who wrote Seinfeld.
But I think Seinfeld is brilliant on so many different levels. And that's it sucks for... Well, I know Kramer got... some trouble, which he should have.
Well, he put himself in that position.
But those guys were typecast. Like George Costanza's he's been in things since then, and everyone still looks at him. He's George.
Yeah.
Elaine has gone on to...
Although she's in Veep, which I've never seen, but Veep. I've heard is a very good show.
Yeah, she was also in, I believe, a show called Christine. It was like a sitcom. Funny. Mm. It was decent. I watched a couple seasons. I think it was Christine. I've got to look back on it, but...
Anyway, they do get typecast.
Typecast, for sure.
Of course you do.
Banya's typecast.
Putty, all those guys, Peterman, you can't take them as anything but the characters they were in Seinfeld.
Yeah.
So it's probably a blessing and a curse in some ways at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Bob McKenzie will be in studio. We'll tee up game 2 tonight in Winnipeg. Winnipeg looking to go 2-0 up on Vegas. The Caps take both games out of Tampa. We'll get into that. And Richard Griffin will join us. Vladdy Guerrero Jr., spotted in New York, but he's off to Hartford. That's where his team is going.
It'll
but some people thinking he might be coming up. We'll see what Griff has to say about that. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.